Previously on Lost.
Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, Jeff?
Morse?
Subway, do you know who I am? I'm one of the Oceanic Six!
You gotta find me, John. You gotta find me. And when you do, you'll find him.
Who?
Jacob.
I think we did the right thing, Jack. I think he wants us to come back.
Two players. Two sides. One is light. One is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back! We have to go back! We have to go back! We have to go back!
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast for Season 4, Episode 2, Confirmed Dead. And I have a question. What color or pattern tie do you wear to an island of mystery? Fashion choices are important. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I'm wearing a black matte tie with shiny white flames coming up from the bottom.
My name is Joanne Robinson, and if I'm Charlotte Lewis, the token female of this group, I'm obviously wearing the Hydra Station logo, baby.
And I'm Neil Miller, and wearing is sort of an overstatement here. I'm going to have one of those Bill Nye-style polka dot bow ties because I'm pro-science, but I'm going to keep it in the pocket of my Hawaiian shirt because I am Frank Lapidus in this situation.
We have more people joining our Losties on the Island of Mystery officially this week. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. This podcast is an ideal companion if you're rewatching the ABC series Lost with us or visiting the island for the very first time. Each episode comes in sections for your listening pleasure. First, there's a calm section of the podcast that only discusses the preceding episodes and avoids all spoilers. And then there's a second section called The Storm. It's a storm of spoilers discussing this week's episode in the context of the entire series and over a decade of Lost fandom. If you want to support us besides listening, and thank you for listening, you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers, and there you will also see bonuses you will get for subscribing monthly at a dollar amount. There are different bonuses for different levels of subscriptions. A lot of the bonuses are extra podcast material, but you can also join us for our Slack watch-alongs every week of Lost and other things. We watched Over the Garden Wall this last weekend together with our Slack bays, and it was fantastic. Ain't that just the way? Patreon.com/stormofspoilers. You could get access to more content like two podcasts Joanna has been doing in these very difficult pandemic times. Joanna, we recently have wrapped up Chen Pop Lovecraft Country. Is that correct?
Yes. Our finale sort of assessment of the series is up for our Patreons. It's actually at our $5 level because Dave Chen messed up on his Patreon. So I thought, hey, why not give it to our $5 Patreon subscribers?
It's a flash sale.
Yeah. So you can listen to us talk about sort of our take on the whole series. So that's one thing. And then Kristen Russo and I, of course, are feels like the first timing our way through spooky season. It is October. We together watched Nightmare on Elm Street number 3, Dream Warriors.
Ooh.
Which I really loved. I watched it while I carved a pumpkin with some friends in my backyard, and it was a really good time. Wednesday this week we are watching The Craft. So, you know, we're watching some spooky movies and having a good old Halloween time. But speaking of watching movies, what I am most excited for, no offense to Kristen and Halloween, but I'm really, really excited for our Patreon movie club in the Storm Slack this month, because I have picked Romeo plus Juliet, Baz Luhrmann's Romeo plus Juliet, starring none other than Harold Perrineau, Michael himself. So, you know, come see Michael as you've never seen him before if you haven't somehow seen this great movie. I'm so excited. Our Slack is thrilled because it's just a bunch of like 90s babies in there, and we're all really excited to watch the movie if you've never seen
Your
it.
Your thirst trap has worked on our Slack, and now it's going to work on our podcast listeners.
It's so good. So that's something we're going to be watching together this Sunday, I believe, in the Slack. So if you're not already a subscriber to our Patreon, join our secret movie club, and you can watch Romeo plus Juliet with us. It's really fun. So like all of those perks and extras, and not to mention our weekly storm chasing where we talk about a bunch of stuff that we're watching or absorbing or listening to. We basically do like an extra episode of the storm every week. If you're not part of our Patreon, you're not hearing it, but you could have been in like way early on the Ted Lasso train if you listened to Neil talk about it weeks ago. So, you know, so if you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers, that's where you can find all of our Patreon stuff, or if you just want to know like sort of what's up with us in general, including like that movie watch, you can go to stormpodcast.com. That's where we keep our schedule of everything that we're trying to accomplish. I'm doing a lot of live watches this week. Another live watch I'm doing on Thursday, we're watching the new Rebecca, because that's our book club pick this week. So the new Rebecca with Lily James and Armie Hammer, which is dropping on Netflix this Wednesday, as you're listening to this today, we'll be live watching it together in the book club channel on our Slack on Thursday. So a lot of communal watching time. We're all at home. What else are we doing? Worrying about the election? No. All right. So you can also go to @StormPodcast on Twitter if you want to keep up to date with our like history polls or you know, various announcements of what we're up to. You can also email us, hosts@stormpodcast.com. I got some great emails to read for you guys this week, including one that made Dave like shriek with joy. Not shriek. Exclaim positively. when I put it in the notes earlier. This is also usually the section where I read reviews from you all, but there are no new reviews. So, you know. We would like some. Thank you.
How do we know how we're doing? I thought we were doing well.
But who's to
say? We don't know for sure. I need a metric.
The last thing I'm going to vlog before we get to our emails is yet another live watch this Saturday. We'll be watching season 4, episode 3, The Economist. Our producer, Diana, who loves Saeed, is hosting this Saeed thirst trap on Saturday.
I
will be disabling the Slack bot in our
The Saeed thirst is going to overflow. Not to spoil anything.
It's a lot. That episode's a lot. So, you know, Diana will be there to usher you through all of that on Saturday in our Patreon Slack. So that is all of the communal stuff we're doing. Let us get to some emails. First, an email from Jeff, who sent us an email that has both calm stuff and storm stuff, so I'll get to his storm stuff later, but the calm question was, why are you calling them, them being Greta and Bonnie, Dharma lesbians? Aren't they other lesbians? And the answer to that is, when we first started talking about them, I decided to call them Dharma lesbians because we didn't know at that moment. When you first meet them, you don't necessarily know if they're working for Ben or if they are, like, how long have they been out of the sea? Who knows? You know, so I intentionally said Dharma lesbians at first to keep it sort of ambiguous. And then I just got too enamored of my, like, SpongeBob SquarePants, who lives in a pineapple under the sea, Dharma lesbians joke, and didn't want to get rid of it. But yes, technically they are other lesbians. So thank you for that underwater lesbian point of order, Jeff. Next, we have an email. This is the one that got our Dave excited. It is about the All Dave's theory. Yes. And this one comes from Robbie. And Robbie has been like sitting on this email for a while. Because he was waiting for the introduction of Charlotte Lewis. He said, I think during Trisha Tanaka is Dead, host Dave said, all Daves are one Dave. This led me on a deep dive of all the characters named in Lost named David. There are at least 5, not counting Desmond David Hume. There's David Reyes, Hurley's father, David Smith, Libby's husband, Dave, Hurley's imaginary friend, not actually a real Dave. You're going to have to bleep that.
And bleep.
And David Lewis, which is the name of Charlotte's father, which I don't consider a spoiler. It's not like that important at all. So I think it's fine to say that Charlotte has a father and his name is David, apparently.
Did we not learn that from Ben? Because we might as well learn that from Ben this episode in terms of just blood facts type rattled off.
Okay. Okay, so while Robbie was searching through the Daves and Davids, he came across an absolutely bonkers fan theory on Lostpedia. And this theory, Hurley's father, David Reyes, is actually one and the same person as David Lewis, the father of Charlotte Lewis, and David Smith, husband of Libby. All Daves are one Dave. 7 months of quarantine does weird things to how you choose to spend your time, because then I started to do the math, figuring, oh, this won't be that hard to disprove. No way the timing of this theory actually lines up. To my frustration, the math kind of checks out. Okay. 1968. Libby is born. He used Cynthia Watrous's real birthday for that. 1971, Charlotte is born to David Reyes. I should say really quickly, in this episode, Charlotte says she's born in 1979, I think. And
that's correct.
And on Lostpedia, they said she should have been born in 1971.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, they blamed it's a controversial for changing it herself. But anyway, Charlotte, born 1971 to David Reyes. 1977, can I say what this says here?
Well, we'll say it, and if we can't, we'll bleep it.
David Reyes leaves shortly after, meets and marries Carmen. December 1978, Hurley is born. 1988, David Reyes abandons Hurley and Carmen. Libby is now age 20. 1991, David Reyes meets and marries Libby. 2004, David Reyes sees Hurley's lottery win, fakes death, and returns Libby, now age 37. In summary, I cannot definitively disprove the theory that all Daves are in fact one Dave, so if you suspend your disbelief that a character played by Rebecca Mader could reasonably be fathered by Cheech Marin, then yeah, I guess all Daves are one Dave.
Yes!
All Daves are Cheech.
All Daves are one Dave is a good enough thing to have proven. All Daves are one Dave and it's Cheech Marin is like the great silver lining to this theory.
As far as why there are at least five characters in Lost named David, two of them absent fathers, one a bad influence, imaginary friends, Damon Lindelof was actually asked about how David Reyes' name was chosen, to which he responded, "We like certain biblical names, and David is one of them. David happened to be my father's name." Maybe that's sort of God forever, Damon, just like putting it out there. David happened to be my father's name. Maybe that's sort of subconsciously rattling around in there. But when has Damon's relationship with his father ever crept into his writing? Thanks for indulging this, my trip down this ridiculous rabbit hole. Thanks for all that you guys are doing. Love the pod and all the discussions, jokes, and interviews. Keep staying safe and healthy. All the best, Robbie. Thank you, Robbie. That was great. I love that. Sorry for all the bleeps, guys. We will get to some other Davids in the future. Or will we? All right.
Dun, dun, dun. We'll get to another version of the Dave in the future.
The Cheech. All right, so this email comes from Claire, and this is a follow-up to, I think it was Melissa's email, where she did a sort of like, feels like the first time what I knew about Lost before I watched Lost. So this one comes from Claire. Greetings from Canada. I picked up the storm when my brother finally talked me around to watching Lost and was short a podcast. It wasn't the first time I'd rucked up against it, though, and since I began as more or less commie, I thought I'd write in and respond to your prompt about what I knew when I started. I first came to Lost by way of my Latin class, where my major takeaway in between Amo, Amas, Amat, and all that was that no one, bar no one, liked Kate. They must have had other opinions, but I wasn't watching and was too focused on declining nouns to pay too much attention. That was the end of my Lost interaction until I picked up The Revolution Was Televised. Convinced I'd never watched the show anyway, and having never been spoiler-averse in any case, I settled into the chapter on Lost while childminding. I then forgot the lot until I came back to the show on the recommendation of my brother. Consequently, my knowledge going to the show went something like this. There was something called a hatch. The hatch was somehow significant. It was obliquely related, as I thought, to something called Dharma, which may or may not have been the same as... At some point, for some reason, someone agreed... In an effort to save other people from something else, there was a smoke monster flashbacks, and assorted permutations thereon. I'm skipping. And then no one could agree about the ending. That looks like quite a lot on paper, but in practice, the experience was akin to building a three-dimensional puzzle if you had no picture to reference and only instructions on offer were in a language you neither read nor spoke. Nothing made sense out of context. A great part of the fun moving through the seasons has been realizing which pieces slot into place where. I did have two very specific spoilers going in, but there's nothing like a bit of Chekhov's character death to keep you on edge. And against all odds, neither We Have to Go Back nor that iconic Desmond scene were on my radar at all. As of writing, I've regrettably run out of episodes, all without binging properly either. It's such effort to find good TV, I ration them out per night. Now, obviously, I have to go back. Looking forward to hearing more of your thoughts moving forward, and all the best. Claire. So, thank you, Claire, from Canada. I don't know if I caught all the things that should have been bleeped out of that. And this last email comes from Katie. Unless there's anything you want to say to Claire's email.
No. Mm-hmm. I like people's willingness to know things, because obviously it's the execution of those things that is important.
Mm-hmm. All right. This last email is from Katie, who signs her email Cads. So Cads or Katie, however you prefer. Hello there. I've never done a rewatch of Lost, but I vaguely remember that throughout season four, one big question is who died / who's in the coffin, which gave me the idea for a new corner in your podcast called What's in the Box? This corner would only come up when there's an episode that teases that question. So 401 and I would say 402 would not be one of those. Maybe there's a poll that goes up, if possible, of who, what's in the box. A polar bear? Walt in the computer? The possibilities are endless. So what do you guys say to this potential new corner inclusion?
I mean, I think it'll be a really fun one to come back to, because I think we're in a fun period of Lost where they're like, hey, remember that thing, that thing about the coffin and who's in the coffin? Yeah. Don't worry about that for now.
Yeah.
We'll be back to that in a couple episodes.
So we're going to put a pin in that.
Right. But I like it.
Yeah, I like it.
It is something you should be thinking about and actively guessing if you're in the calm.
Love it. All right. So those are our emails and all the stuff we're watching and all the ways you can contact us, which means it's time for Neil to tell us what happened on Lost this week.
Oh, I'm very excited. If you watched it with us live, you will note that this is a very quick episode of Lost. It really, really rips. Confirmed Dead is what it's called. And it was directed by Stephen Williams. It was written by Drew Goddard and Brian K. Vaughan. It aired on February 7th, 2008, and it takes place on days 91 and 92 on the islands in flashbacks. Yeah, flashbacks are back. We learn about the members of the freighter team. There's Daniel Faraday, who's a physicist, but really isn't into labels. There's Miles, who talks to dead people and steals their money. There's Charlotte, who has been digging up Derma polar bear bones in Tunisia. And Frank, a pilot who specializes in wearing Hawaiian shirts and having Oceanic 815 conspiracy theories. Love Frank. We learned that all of these people were chosen for a reason, and that the key to their mission is Naomi's amazing leadership. Oops. Back on the island, Team Jack starts by meeting Daniel, then has a bit of trouble with Miles until the ghost of Naomi apparently sorts that out. But they ultimately locate Frank and the helicopter. Also, Frank sees a cow. Team Locke is on the other side of the island, taking a detour on their way back to Dharmaville. This all leads them to finding Charlotte, who is lucky that she wore her bulletproof vest, as the encounter is anything but friendly, and apparently we're totally cool just keeping guns out near Ben. It all ends with Ben revealing that he knows all kinds of stuff about the freighter crew, because he has a spy on their boat. Fun fact about this episode, this is the first episode to feature a flashback for a dead character, in this case, Naomi, who has been dead for several episodes, or two episodes, yeah. We'll start with this week's column question. Actually, I want to just start with a polygon check-in, because I think the episode starts with some interesting television polygons. In the what I like to call the James Cameron underwater sequence. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the polygons of Oceanic Flight 815 on the bottom of the ocean? Let's start with Joanna.
Oh, I mean, I don't know anything about polygons. And I think it was helped by the fact that, like, isn't kind of supposed to be like, you know, it's an underwater cam. So it's supposed to be kind of like grainy and shitty. So it didn't really like stand out to me in a way that super bothered me. I'm going to give it a 7.
All right. All right, Dave, the pressure is on.
I'm going to throw it right down the middle with a 5 because I think the plane stuff is great. And then later using, you know, like some underwater dummy corpse footage, I'm assuming, to like marry it together is great. But those like initial rolling over the bottom of the ocean things, if you kind of, and this is my memory of it, and it was at the live watch, but I think like some of the textures roll into each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of looks like the ocean is the ocean floor is texture mapped rather than like modeled. So if we're actually talking about polygons, that's actually fewer polygons with a texture of rock placed over them to make them look more complex. And so that when you're like cresting the hill to get to the plane, it's those things don't look so good. Plane though, really like it.
All right. Yeah, I mean that was pretty much what I was thinking as I was rewatching it. Was that the initial, like, especially there's like one that sort of pans up and you first see like a suitcase that's open, and I'm like, oh, that doesn't look good. That's not great.
Right.
Once they do get to the plane, I like the plane.
What about
what is that plane doing there? That's the question.
What about dead pilot?
Oh well, I mean, you know, that looks pretty horrifically real.
Yeah.
Did not look anything like Greg Grunberg.
What about zooming on bloated dead pilot fingers?
Right.
That gives me more questions about who's running that news broadcast than it does about anything else. Where it's like, okay, can we cut to something else while they're, I'm sure, doing very important work on this pilot's dead hand or something?
Yeah, I think it's more of a journalistic question. Like, is it responsible to show the close-ups of a bloated dead underwater body on the news?
That's step one. Okay, that's a good point. The first weird thing is to be like, here's a picture of this live gentleman next to his dead, bloated underwater corpse we haven't recovered yet. The second thing is just, it's at how many pure seconds they're on. Because, like, Lapidus has time to, like, call somebody and, like, make a impassioned plea that that guy, the body's not Greg Grunberg, the pilot who died in Pilot. Because he doesn't have a ring on his finger. And like when they cut back to the TV, we're still on that shot. What about everybody else who isn't having that conversation? Like, what's the most interesting part of Flight 815 is the pilot's dead hand floating there? That's real grim.
Speaking of news, go ahead.
Well, but like, what about pilot Seth Norris's like bad dad who must be watching this or something like that? You know what I mean? Like, what about his family?
His wife, who he married at 19.
Oh yeah, his sweetheart, his childhood
sweetheart.
She's
probably having a tough time with this.
She's like, can you pan away, please? Thank you.
You're like, look at the hand, though.
Can I issue an email prompt for our calm listeners?
Absolutely.
Okay, calm listeners. First of all, I love this episode, by the way. I think it's fantastic. I think
great
it
episode.
Is not given enough credit. It should be like in the top of Lost rankings for how well it introduces new characters. But that aside, a lot of big questions out of this episode. But I would like our calm listeners to email us if they have any thoughts about how a polar bear got to Tunisia with a Hydra station collar on it. So, if you have any thoughts on that, I'd like to hear them. Email us, hosts@stormpodcast.com.
Oh, yeah. I want to bounce back to the thing you said about how good it does introducing new characters. And it's interesting that sort of reading the press coverage leading up to this season, I think we talked about it in the storm last week a little bit, but they were sort of downplaying. Like before, like Nikki and Paolo, it's like, here's the Tom Cruise equivalent of another country that we're flying in to like
the
add to our
puck of
wait till you see what happens with these new people. And then on the Tailies obviously was a huge addition, and they had big plans for people like Echo. and apparently stuck to their plan with Anosia, which is good. But either way, it sort of ended, and they, in a way that the Tailies kind of fell off, and they kind of make fun of it. Hurley makes fun of it in this episode.
So funny.
But they managed to have downplayed their strongest introduction of new season characters yet, I think, because Joanna and Neil are right. This episode is really well constructed and cooks with the mystery and the intrigue. You even have like one of like the Ridley Scott alien scares where the beeping is getting closer, and but then it's Vincent.
I have a question about that.
Yeah.
Do you like Hurley, who is clearly like in charge of Vincent, right? Great pair, great all-time duo, Hurley and Vincent. Do you think he'd be cool with the plan of like, let's just send Vincent running off into the jungle with Charlotte's tracker on him?
I want to see the argument between Hurley and John Locke on that
one. Like Hurley wouldn't let that pushback? Happen. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, no way.
We're not going to send Vincent to get shot. Mm-mm. Then again, Hurley... He's a sweet, sweet man. Probably is like, no one would shoot the dog. You're right.
Yeah, he's probably, and I think he'd also know that Vincent would like find his way back to people he knew, because Vincent spent a lot of time, you know, off leash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the king of this island.
Yeah, Locke has all the guns and has a bullet hole through him that shouldn't.
Do you think Hurley would have put up more of a fight if he knew that Jack was there with a gun? Because if anybody's going to accidentally shoot the dog, maybe Jack.
Yeah, that's true. I think... No, because I think he had to know that Jack was going to be there. Because at that point, they know that there's trackers on the people, and they are collecting as many people from the helicopter as they can, while Jack kind of goes and collects as many people from the helicopter as he can.
They don't know that Jack's doing that.
Yeah, I don't know if they know Jack's there.
Jack, well,
they just think.
I guess they don't know that Jack's there. They
just
know
Charlotte's
it's the
people. Yeah.
There. Right. Right. No, because I think if Hurley's technically on Team Locke, then he thinks that the people on the freighter are there to hurt them. So he's could be scared for Vincent. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I didn't mean to open up such a can of worms. I was just sort of like, I don't think Hurley would let John do this.
Hurley has seen a lot of confusing things over the last couple of days. And everybody keeps looking at him funny. Like, I love the moment where Hurley's like, yeah, but the cabin was over there. And both Locke and Ben are like, what did he say?
Oh, ho, ho.
You've seen some sort of cabin, have you?
Oh, that was good recovery, though. I meant the plane cabin. Good. Oh, good swerve, Hurley. I appreciate it.
It's good for Hurley to realize that he's in a situation where he should be keeping secrets, because that isn't always his strong suit.
Yeah.
Now he's like a bit more of a player in the game, which I think we saw foreshadowed with the fact that in our flash forward, he says that he shouldn't have gone with Locke when the camp split. So we got some hesitant Hurley as they sort of kidnap Charlotte. They're one of the fantastic freighter four. As I'm looking at our notes, we've given them superhero identities.
Not we.
Oh, who gave them superhero identities?
They're modeled. This is a thing. It's a known thing. I found out from our listeners. Do you want to hear the breakdown?
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So I never heard this before, but I looked up old articles from the time. It is true. The four characters that we meet, who are Dan Faraday, Charlotte, Lewis, Miles Strom, Maelstrom, and Frank Lapidus, are modeled after the Fantastic Four. So let's start with Dan. He's modeled after Reed Richards, a.k.a. Mr. Fantastic, a socially awkward physicist whose body is as elastic as Faraday's view of himself. Then we have Miles Strom, Maelstrom, Johnny Storm, the hot-headed human torch as fiery as Strom's temper and wit. When Saeed suspiciously inquired as to why Miles and Daniel weren't surprised to find the castaways alive, if the outside world considered them dead, Strom sarcastically responded, "Oh my god, you guys were on Oceanic A-15. Wow, that better?" Even Saeed seemed to smirk at that one. Charlotte, who I am called the polyglot paleontologist only because I miss the polyglot parachutist, but she's like an anthropologist, archaeologist. So she's not a paleontologist. But anyway, and we know she's a polyglot because she's like reading newspapers in various languages, right? Okay. She's Sue Storm, not just because she's a woman, but in the comic books, Sue's hard light powers were handy for conjuring bullet-repelling shields and making herself invisible. Want to bet Charlotte is hiding... This is all... Sorry, I should have said. I stole this from Jeff Jensen. Want to bet Charlotte is hiding something about herself, something that's right in front of us, what we can't see, something besides a bulletproof vest. More on that in a moment. And then lastly, we got Frank Lapidus. Lapidus is a kind of rock. Lupita's analog is Ben Grimm, who piloted the team's ill-fated space flight through a storm of cosmic rays and was transported into the sad-eyed, rock-encrusted thing for his trouble. So, apparently this was, like, a thing that I don't know why this never, like, permeated my awareness of the show.
Yeah, this is the first time I've seen this, and that's amazing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I really like this. It does not, you know, mesh with my reading of who Reed Richards is as a person, but that's cool.
I think it's meant to be, like, kind of loose. Like,
oh, yeah. You know? No, I get it. And, you know, if they had made it straight, it would be dumb.
Yeah.
So I'm glad they didn't do that. But I also am a very vocal proponent, as is my friend since kindergarten, Julian Mitchell, that Reed Richards is an asshole.
And as far as we know, Dan Faraday is not.
Yes.
As far as we know.
I mean, saying that Reed Richards is a socially awkward physicist, I think, is overlooking a lot of Reed Richards' villainous qualities.
Problematic issues? Yeah. Sure. Okay.
You know, naming somebody the Invisible Girl because she has the power to turn invisible, which is like the least of her powers, as accurately pointed out by Jeff Jensen. So I like this. This I like. Anyway.
Speaking of that, of Charlotte, like the fake out Charlotte death, which mercifully only lasts like less than a minute, pretty much. Mm-hmm. My first rewatch of this today, I was like, is it cheap that only Charlotte has a vest on? But apparently in the like helicopter crash at the beginning of the episode, which I kind of like missed, cause it's so like hectic. She's like, she can't find her vest and Miles gives her his. So like, it's established in the helicopter crash that like, why she would have a vest and no one else was, because she was concerned about having it and Miles gave her his. I don't know how she then got it on and under her jacket in time to parachute out of the helicopter, but she did. So there you go.
I have a question / theory about the gun that's used in that scene. So Ben grabs it from Carl.
Mm-hmm.
And Carl's had the gun presumably since he like met up with the party at the broadcasting station. Do we think that's Alex's gun?
Maybe. Why?
Because if it is, then that's the gun that, like, she gave John Locke that ended up shooting John Locke. So that gun, although it does hit people, is very bad at being a gun. Because it is a very low.
I thought that was like a revolver. Mortality.
Yeah, wasn't that one a revolver?
I thought that was a revolver.
Really? I thought it was like a big boxy gun. Because John comes back with the revolver because he pulls the revolver from the pit.
I'm trying to find it.
Oh, that makes sense. Because John tries to kill himself with the revolver.
And then Ben brings back the gun from shooting Locke and gives it back to Alex and is like, it did come in handy or some like Ben shit like that. And so then if he meet up with Carl and Carl's like, let me be the man and take the handgun, which is dumb as we see here. That gun is then used to shoot Charlotte and like has fired 3 rounds on screen that we've seen, and none of them have worked.
You're right. It is a, as you say, big boxy gun. I don't know the make or model of it, but it's not
it's Chekhov's ineffective gun.
Yeah, Chekhov's ineffective gun. I do like just like the introduction of guns, but just like also the introductions that guns don't really have to mean anything.
I do like that. How many times people are like eyeballing people's guns in their waistbands in this episode.
It's a lot of gun eyeballing in this episode.
Love to eyeball a gun. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, do you think like, I guess I want to know what Neil thinks. Like, why do you think this is such an effective introduction of these 4 characters? Like, why does this work in a way that it hasn't worked for them before? Neil.
I actually think it's like the time constraint of doing it all in this one episode, but trying to do all 4 people. So I think for one, with the Tailies, we had far more characters to track and deal with. And that was fine for a while. But this one, it's like it's very focused on these four characters. You know, we know, as we'll check in on, like, we are aware of other characters on the freighter. But right now it's these four and then Naomi, who's dead. So it allows them to structure this episode in a way that sort of bounces between the four and really paints a little bit of the picture of how they got to the island and why they're there, but doesn't give us too much information quite yet. I mean, it's a really great way to deliver four separate mysteries in one episode, you know, in these flashbacks of like, all right, what's the story with Miles and dead people? Why, how did Charlotte know to even look for a polar bear in Tunisia? You know, why was Dan crying when he saw that Flight 815 was found? And they don't really explain that yet because there's a lot of, you know, momentum on the island. There's this now this very urgent island story where we have our two camps of survivors that are battling for control of like who gets to talk to the freighter team and who's capturing who. And it's this fun, you know, chess game where they're moving pieces around, and it's so rich with mystery as well. I think that's the ultimate thing about the flashbacks, is that they don't answer every question. They are giving us all kinds of different mysteries. And I just think, combined with like the way the episode's paced, it's so exciting. Like I feel like I walked away the first time, and then on subsequent rewatches, and I feel like the one of the takeaways we had from the live watch was I'm just really excited about all four characters that we just met, you know.
Same. I famously, and I feel okay to say this in the calm, do not like Charlotte in general, but I do like her in this episode. So I feel up on these four characters as they exist right now in this episode. I think you're right. I think that calibration of, because like if you think about the tailies, it really felt like we had to press pause on our main plot, and or you know, like we felt like we were in this Ana Lucia sort of valley for a really long time, and frustrating because we're not getting movement on our other stories. And then with Nikki and Paolo, it was the opposite, where they like just sort of try to sneak them in the back door, kind of. And that was sort of their, they thought it would be really brilliant and they were incorrect. And that's okay. But so this is like somewhere in the middle, which is like, let's take some time for them, but not, we still have, you know, plenty of Locke and Ben and Jack and Kate and Sawyer drama cooking to balance it.
And the big mystery that overshadows all of it is, how the hell did they find Flight 815 at the bottom of the ocean? Right. In the, what are they, what's it called? The Sunda Trench?
Trench. Yeah.
Because that, and I like that in each flashback, you have how that news reaches the four people that we now are investing in. So it really sort of ties together a lot more neatly than even our tailies, I guess.
I think that Naomi flashback is really smart too, even though it's a little weird to have a flashback from a point of view of a dead character. Because it's like, okay, we get all the other flashbacks, and it's like, okay, to recap, we have a Ghostbuster, a head case, an anthropologist, and what does she call Lupita's? A drunk, I guess. And a heck of a pilot. You know what I mean? Like, here we go. Here are our four new characters.
Well, it also connects Lance Reddick to Freighter Group, because we only saw him previously with Hurley, correct?
Spook and Hurley.
Spook and Hurley.
Abaddon. I mean, I know why you called him Lance Reddick, but just in case people didn't watch The Wire. Yes, Abaddon.
But it's like, it's, I really like what Neil said about, because they have to do all of them in one, it's really like a distilled shot of character, and enough that you get like sort of a glimpse as to whether or not you may like them out of this island context. But then back on island, we're back to some like survivor level shit of people trying to game and alliances and whatnot. And we do the episode does an interesting tactic where we have Sawyer and Juliet break out to go back and
Said and
loop
Juliet.
Back around. Saeed and Juliet, mm-hmm. correct? And then sort of lets us forget about them so they could use them dramatically with Jack later.
Great. Yeah. Because even though I've rewatched this episode a bunch recently, I was like, what a weird bluff, Jack. And I was like, oh, wait, no. Saeed and Juliet are here. That's great. Yeah.
But just like very well structured, and especially with having them meet Miles and accuse Kate to act out, and then coming back and explain that Miles can talk to ghosts. So it's not like as weird as you'd think, because ghosts exist in Lost World now. I think we thought maybe they could because of Hurley and Charlie last week, but this one seems to indicate that at least we're supposed to believe there's a ghost presence off the island, unless his little dustbuster machine was porting him to through time or some other tomfoolery.
No, I mean, I think it's safe to say that this episode establishes the existence of ghosts, or at least someone who could communicate with the dead. Yeah, to loop back quickly to like successful character introduction or no, I think it's kind of the Juliet approach, like the successful Juliet approach, only times four. I think it's really smart, and really just great. These characters are great, and you're so excited to learn more about them. I did want to say something clarifying maybe about Dan Faraday, that so apparently I didn't remember this, but apparently ABC used to air like regular episodes of Lost and then enhanced episodes of Lost, which were essentially like a pop-up video version of the episode.
Do you guys remember video those? Is a thing from the 1990s that was on VH1.
Yeah, that was where they would give you facts about music videos on screen with tech.
God, I still remember that sound like in my boop. Dreams.
So anyway, you could watch the episode of Lost with like little bubble facts that popped up. And in the enhanced episode, they clarify that the woman with Dan Faraday in his flashbacks is his caretaker. So to add to the mystery of what's going on with Dan Faraday, he has a caretaker. I don't know. I think if you didn't know that, it could have been like, you know, his partner or his, you know.
Yeah,
mom or sister, roommate. Or whatever. But no, it's his caretaker. So,
all right,
there you go,
Dan. There's another many ghost. Layers to Dan, as
what's
we're
going on, Dan?
As we're learning in this episode alone.
Jeremy. So I'm glad that we get to call him Dan Faraday. Well, should we talk about meanings of names?
Sure.
Fantastic Four breakdown, but we should do the names. What do you guys know about Dan Faraday?
I just know that there's a Faraday cage, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
what do Faraday cages do? They protect you from electromagnetic.
Disperses electric charge in a way that can keep you safe within it from
like if you're going to get hit by lightning or something.
Yeah, if you're going to get shot with
Getting hit by lightning is something that gets mentioned multiple times. The helicopter gets hit by lightning, apparently, according to Frank, and John Locke is Hurley's like, hey man, you're gonna get hit by lightning. So it's interesting that they're running
gonna
around chasing a Faraday
cage.
Yeah, so I think Faraday is the most like Locke, Rousseau, you know, whatever sort of like Hume, like, oh, this is a name I should pay attention to. Yeah, Michael Faraday was a scientist in the field of electricity and magnetism. So and then Daniel, of course, I think is a reference to like Daniel in the Lion's Den, sort of a biblical name, as per that email. Damon Lindelof is fond of putting biblical names in his stuff. What about, well, we already talked about Maelstrom, mm-hmm. which is, I think, a little silly, but that's fine. What about Charlotte Staples Lewis?
Charlotte Staples Lewis, old C.S. Lewis herself. She wrote that one about the armoire. No.
About the Jesus lion.
The tiger, the wizard, and the armoire.
The wardrobe. Yeah, mm-hmm. That one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she's named for C.S. Lewis, who's Clive Staples Lewis. Jeff Jensen has a really interesting thing here. And I think it is, I'm going to talk about it. Which is, Jeff has a theory that, you know, as the episode aired, Jeff has a theory that this is not Charlotte's first time to the island, given her reaction of elation when she lands in the water. And she's like, really, she's, oh my God, I'm here. And to him, it read like, oh my God, I'm back in some way. And Jeff brought up Prince Caspian. A book by C.S. Lewis. And he says the story starts with a chapter called The Island, in which the Pevensey kids return to Narnia via a mysterious island marked by ancient ruins and odd creatures. First thing they do, play in the water. So that is Charlotte Lewis. And then Frank Lapidus, I think we mentioned before, Lapidus is a form of rock. So. Those are our new names.
Solid as a rock.
Frank Lapidus. It's a type of granite, specifically. So those are new names. Exciting. And we also have, can we do a freighter check-in? Which is a new corner.
Yeah, sure. Just a rundown of who we know exists.
Yeah.
Who we know from the freighter.
Neil, who do we know exists on the freighter?
Well, Naomi used to.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Yeah.
Then we have Dan, Miles, Charlotte. And Frank are what we the most identified as the science team. They all have some sciency, even Miles, that's sort of spiritual science or paranormal science. We have Minkowski, George Minkowski. We have not met him yet, but we've heard his voice. Regina, we've also heard a voice. Both of those are very familiar voices, by the way, to me at least. And then we have Ben's man, Ben's spy, whoever that is, that we do not know yet. So we're starting to fill in a little bit of freighter crew. I don't know how many people it takes to get a freighter into the South
to
Pacific.
To an island of mystery.
But it's at least 8 or 9, probably more than that.
Yeah, we don't know which one of the island team was playing double duty on the freighter and which one wasn't. Is there a whole crew? So like a Titanic number of people on this freighter?
Mm-hmm. How big is the freighter? It's, you know, we haven't seen it yet, so it's exciting.
It is. And we are also back in another episode in a season that thus far has been very good for people who like to see Michael Emerson punched in the face.
Yes.
Do you think it was like in their contracts? Like the main cast, we're all getting X amount of millions per episode.
Everyone gets to hit Michael Emerson.
Everyone who is in the pilot gets to at some point punch Michael Emerson in the face on screen.
How many hours do you think Michael Emerson spent in the makeup chair getting red goo smeared on his face?
Probably a lot. I was reading through the bloopers on Lostpedia, and they're like, one, at this shot, Michael Emerson has a piece of glass stuck to his head, where in this shot, it's like God. And I'm like, that is fine. Like, God bless that man.
The continuity of Michael Emerson's facial injuries is a deep concern.
I know, but also, like, how do you get a piece of glass stuck in your fake face wound when you're shooting out in the Hawaiian jungle? I'm very confused by everything.
He was very method. This he went and got himself punched a bunch.
Yeah, a bunch. By a whole window, even.
Well, I mean, and then it's like the idea that the freighter team is there for Ben. You're like, whoa. Nobody likes that guy. Yeah, it's interesting because the reason Sawyer goes ham on Ben is like, you know, Sawyer steps in and is like, calm down, kid. He's just trying to get under your skin, like, you know, to like intervene with his boy, Carl. And then, you know, falls for the same trap that he was trying to save Carl from. It was a super obvious trap, like, alas, alack, that Sawyer fell for that. But what it's part of is the reintroduction of the love quadrangle, because we also get that, like, weird Jack and Juliet and Kate moment when they're, like, walking the jungle, and Kate's like, wish someone had told me that people were not. And then Juliet's like, smirk, smirk, sexy smirk. And Jack's like, I kissed one of you and told the other one I loved her.
What a great plan I have.
And then Miles showed up and was like, hey, handsome. And you're like, oh, no. But anyway, I hate the love quadrangle, and it can get right out of here. And it's the only thing I don't like about this episode is the return of the quadrangle. So.
But we do get some punching, and then it looks like John Locke is almost ready to kill Ben. And when is given the chance to ask Ben any question about the island to prove that he knows things, thankfully asks what I think a lot of people's question would have been, which is, what is the monster? Bringing old clickety-clack back to the forefront, even though he hasn't popped up in season four.
Yeah, what do you think old clickety-clack's doing these days? Mm. Like, there's a lot of action on a lot of areas of this island, and there's, like, helicopters and stuff. Clickety-clack is, like, what's he
I have
like?
A theory. I have a theory. What's he...
He's like hanging out with his other family or something.
He's having tea with Richard right now.
Yeah, he went wherever Richard and all of Ben's people went.
Yes. All of the others are hanging out with the smoke monster right now.
Yeah. I hope he's having a good time. He's a main character to me.
Yeah. Anyway, Ben doesn't know, but what he does know is the stuff from his man on the boat. He knows all the people that are attacking him. So we can't kill him quite yet.
Do you think he means like man as in like a male, or the way you say like our man in Havana, like, you know, to mean like...
I think it's definitely our man in Havana type. He would have been like, I have a man in the underwater station. He wouldn't have been like, I have two lesbians in the underwater station.
Bonnie and Greta. Oh, I miss Mikhail. Okay.
How do we know Mikhail's not the guy on the boat? I mean,
oh my
that's
God,
all
Mikhail,
I'm saying.
We don't know.
Mikhail swam up from, like, put all of his pieces back together underwater. Mm-hmm. Hopped a ride on the Dharma Shark, broke surface, and hopped up to the freighter.
And got Charlotte's file very quickly.
Like her middle name and everything. It's funny. I do think this is a good Sawyer episode, despite that like love quadrangle thing. I think and I'm gonna keep hammering this, like the more that Sawyer shows his allegiance to Hurley, the more I think we're rooting for him. And so I think I made the assertion last week, and you can agree with me or not, that one of the reasons he went with Team Locke is because Hurley went with Team Locke. I genuinely think that's a reason. Also, the plot needed him separated from Kate and Jack. But in this episode, he's not sure what to do until Hurley gives him a little shake of the head no. And then he backs down from Ben. I mean, Locke comes through with a very clever, like, don't kill Ben in front of his daughter. You know, James, the way that your parents died in front of you. Like, that's some good, like, mind game fuckery that Locke pulled there. But still, it wasn't until Hurley gave the shake of the head that Sawyer backed down, which I like.
I think we even talked about this either last week or maybe even with the season three finale about how they did such a good job of using some of the... What we would normally consider to be like, you know, spare time in season three to create this relationship between Hurley and Sawyer, and this idea that like at this point Sawyer knows that Hurley is genuinely like likes him and wants to, you know, would not put him in harm's way, whereas we cannot say that about John Locke, you know,
right.
So I love that. I love all the work that they've done with those two characters and how that pays off in the presence of John Locke going full tilt, like man of island faith, where he's just like, I believe the island is talking to us, and Walt's here and there's a cabin and he's saying the most ridiculous nonsense. Yet
I'm back in my
series.
Pre-Boone rain predicting days.
Right, like somebody gooped John Locke at this point. And Sawyer, I love Sawyer as like the skeptical guy in this situation. Like, wait, what the hell? Like, we're supposed to be going to the village and like we're going to be safe from the... He's living in the real. And John Locke is chasing ghosts, man.
And it feels like he's there to be defensive. Like, maybe I'm just extrapolating because I do like Sawyer so much, but like... to be protective of Hurley, to be protective of Claire and the baby. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he wants to leave those people who he cares about under the control of John Locke. Right. You know what I mean? He's like,
I mean,
yeah.
I also think there's an element with Sawyer where he and Kate, and the show has explored this several times over the first couple seasons, where he and Kate both are on the run in their life. You know, Sawyer is conning his way through life. Kate is literally on the run from the authorities. And they're not the kind of people who would, you know, necessarily want to go back to the world. So I think Sawyer, it makes it, it would make sense if both of them went with Locke on those grounds alone. So I think it works. And I think that it's there to show how weird it is that Kate is ready to get off the island. You know, like that conversation, that there's that little moment that they have when the group split up in the first episode, that sort of sticks with me as like, you know, the dividing line, even though they both should want to stay on the island, right? Like neither one of them have anything to go back to. And I think that's an interesting conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm split on if Sawyer should want to go back. I mean, I guess I forget that now he did murder a guy off island, but now he's also murdered a guy on island. In terms of people who've seen positive magical things, it hasn't been Sawyer yet.
Right.
So we'll see if he finds something on the island that makes it slightly more positive place to stay.
Well, and he is also like, yeah, big fish in a little pond sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Where like Ben's like, you're king shit on this island, but are you off island? No, my friend. So, you know, that's interesting. Yeah. One last thing I want to mention about the use of character in really smart ways, the use of Saeed's fondness for interrogation to give us exposition. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So Saeed's going to interrogate Miles and Dan and you know, and Charlotte gets some interrogation as well, but like that, it's so well done. They're moving through the jungle, so there's like movement in this exposition scene. There's conflict because Miles doesn't want Dan to give anything away and is being funny and like all this sort of stuff and sarcastic. And Dan is being like his Jeremy Davies, Captain Jack Sparrow vague best. And it's just like it's so smart the way this episode was written. Mm-hmm. So
I would say that, yeah, if there's an MVP of Team Jack, it's Saeed. Like, Jack's plan is going very poorly until Saeed shows up. Until Saeed and Juliet roll up.
I don't know if you've heard, but he is very good. He's and very I, good. I stopped and rewound to watch Naveen Andrews walk out of the jungle again because he's just got this little smirk on his face as if to say, yes, it is me. I am very it is good. Me.
Yes, I am here. I am here, I am here and I have questions.
Who has the beat on you? It's Saeed. Using his ankles, it's Saeed.
And Juliet's like, I am also here, and I'm also very sexy and good.
all right, I think it's time for some corners, then. The Jungle of Mystery moment, we're kicking it off. There's a lot of possible ones here. I think I'm going to have to throw it to Polar Bear in Tunisia, though, because a man on the freighter, that's a cliffhanger. Miles talks to ghosts. I guess we just believe in ghosts now. The polar bear in Tunisia, that's a weird mystery.
I mean, that's you know that we're watching a great episode of Lost. There's a character they introduce who speaks with the dead.
Yeah.
And that's not even the biggest mystery.
That's not going to be the Jungle Mystery moment. the Boone Carlyle Memorial Falling Down Award goes to Charlotte Staples Lewis for falling most of the way down, getting caught in a tree, and then, you know what? Falling the rest of the way down. Good job, Charlotte.
Really, like a really well-shot sequence. Yeah. And I know we've mentioned this several times, but all the best underwater stuff and water-related shots in this show so far have been directed by Stephen Williams. Emmy deserver, Stephen Williams.
Stephen Williams, baby. Yeah, it's so funny because you're watching that scene and you're like, Charlotte, it's not that far and it's water. It's fine. And then she like agrees with you. And she's like, oh, it's not that far. It's water. It'll be fine. So, yeah.
It's great.
And I like, and it's a great, you know, because we get these, it's just smart the way that the flashbacks happen. And then you cut to like the person on the island and stuff like that. And it's fun. It's fun that we find Charlotte hanging upside down. That's fun. Much more fun than cutting to dead Naomi on a stretcher, that's for sure. So, you know.
The Oceanic 6 Detective Corner, we are back in flashbacks, so we don't actually get any new data except back in between the airing of episodes one or two, the show did confirm that Kate is part of the known six. Last week, I tried to make an argument for Ghost Kate. It did not work on the past because way back between episodes one and two airing, they confirmed Kate is one of our known six.
All right. So we know three now, right?
Yes. That is Kate, Jack, and Hurley. They off island sometime in the future. They are together-ish. On island, they are don't necessarily know where all of they are yet. They're in different camps, and Kate's being huffy. Well, Kate's being huffy because of bad plotting, as Joanna pointed out. I don't blame her. All right, accent corner. Ooh, we have an accent corner. Joanna?
Rebecca Mader. Charlotte Staples Lewis herself. Fellas, is Rebecca Mader actually British? Neil?
I really feel like this is one of those where she's not, and it's like a thing, and I can't remember. So I'm going to go with no. She's close, though. She's made like Irish or Scottish.
She's like from the Commonwealth.
She's from like one of those other ones that's attached to the British.
4 million Maids. All right, Dave?
I'm going to say British.
Yeah, she's from Cambridge. So not Essex. Mm. And fun fact, both Dan and Charlotte are from Essex. Just different Essexes. But yeah, she is. Something that I read was that they intended this character to be American and Rebecca Mader asked to play her as British and they said, okay. So,
fine. We're going to blame you for messing up some dates that you didn't mess up, but fine. Desmond Button Corner, not this week. Got no Desmond. That is unfortunate. But we do have a Henry Gale Memorial, obviously a lie award, goes to Daniel Faraday, who says he's not in charge of packing. So, and we don't have gas to masks. Answer the question about the gas masks.
I don't know nothing about no gas masks. That's not my pack.
Oh, weird.
I love, and the way Jeremy Davies plays this character, it's hard to tell if he's lying or if he is genuinely not sure what's going on.
That's true.
So good.
All right, it is time for our Jungle of Kistery. This is where we nominate one or more people, things, or ideas that we would like to make out on this island, because everyone and everything is attractive, right? Yeah. Joanna, how did we do for season 4, episode 1 last week?
Okay, so for the beginning of the end, I think one of our categories was hampered by the fact that we couldn't use the character name because we didn't know that he was Daniel Faraday yet, so we just used the actor name. And I think that confused people, and or they just never want to nominate Jack, because Jeremy Davies and Jack got a paltry 14.8%, even though Jeremy Davies really brought this Mulder when he's like, are you Jack? Kate and Naomi, surprising middle of the pack here, 26.6% of the vote. Maybe because people weren't like, hey, it's hot when the woman dies. Okay, Hurley and Hot Charlie. Hot Ghost Charlie, I suppose, we want to say. 28.1% of the vote. But the returning champs 2 weeks in a row is Danielle's Fist and Ben's Face, 30.5% of the vote. So,
this week, do we have somebody hitting Ben in our?
I feel like it's unfair at this point. It's like if we nominate anyone's fist in Ben's face, it's gonna win.
Only Jin will be able to knock
to break
him down.
That. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And if Jin ever punches Ben, it's over.
It. Yeah,
watch
that's
out.
It.
TKO. All right. So Danielle, Ben's face is not on the poll this week, but we do have a couple like repeat players on this poll. They are very good. They are very hot. They both wear tank tops. Here we go. First of all, we have Sawyer and Carl, which I feel like weird about because like I really feel like Sawyer's giving off like real big brother daddy energy mm-hmm. here. Not like daddy, but like Southern daddy energy. So like I don't love this, but I do like the affection that Sawyer has for Carl and the protectiveness. So but Sawyer and Carl are on the list because one of our listeners nominated them. Then we've got Juliet and Frank. And I don't know how you guys felt about the tableau of like Juliet dabbing.
Just like, I want an oil painting version to go above my bed that is Frank and Juliet. This just her, them both standing there giving a look. I don't remember even who they're looking at. It's just
and they
so
both
good.
Have like beautiful blue eyes, right? It's just like, mm-hmm. oh, yeah. So Juliet and Frank. Then we've got Juliet and Saeed. Oh, they're both Ooh. Very good.
Talking about how many
on
guns
the
are
beach
left.
Together, coming out of the jungle together. We love to see it. But, you know, so that's two for Juliet, but we got two for Saeed because. Saeed and the chopper. I mean,
oh yeah, he does love those electronics.
Oh, he loves a gadget, and this is the biggest gadget of them all so far. So they all—it's really fun when Frank has that great moment where he's like, "Crashed! What kind of pilot do you think I am? I landed her right over there." And then they all like sort of walk over the rise and see the chopper and we get a close up on all of their faces. There's Jack, there's Kate, there's Juliet, and there's Saeed, and they're all giving heart eyes to the helicopter, but Saeed obviously most of all. And then after the next act break, Saeed is like handling the helicopter.
He is deep inside the helicopter at that point.
So, two options to vote for Juliet, two options to vote for Saeed, and
good
our
luck
first,
with that.
Yeah, and our second freighter, you know, person Frank enters the competition here. So, I love Frank, Jeff Fahey. We should say, I remember at the time, I still have not seen Lawnmower Man, but I remember at the time it being a big deal that Jeff Fahey, who was the titular Lawnmower Man,
was the
Lost.
Lawnmower Man.
So, there you go. That's
excellent. We are going to keep it rolling. Actually, no, I'm going to do another corner and then we'll throw back to Joanna. We have a new award. The Carl's coming right now. Act Break Award. From in honor of Carl saying that they're coming right now. Awkwardly named. But this is for our best act break or notable act breaks if we feel like we have one. And I felt that Jack has a good moment this episode, which is knowing that Saeed has a bead on him and Juliet has a bead on Dan, and manages to negotiate Miles's gun away from him. And then Miles asks, "How stupid do you think I am?" And Jack gets a smirk and say, "I don't know, Miles, how stupid are you?" And then we cut to commercial.
Jack has a pretty good episode, I would say, overall.
Yeah, it's a very competent episode for Jack. And like I said, mostly because his friends bail him out. But
Yeah,
still. But Jack is really, I think, balancing the like caution with the like wanting for this. Because like Jack has really staked a lot on it working out with the freighter people.
Right.
So he's invested in working out, but he's not being like a dummy about it. You know what I mean? So
if this was somebody that he knew from his life, he would already be yelling like, "Why aren't we off the island now?
I married her." it's a pretty confident episode for Jack. And it is interesting, this introduction of the freighter people and this recalibration of like who's the other. You know what I mean? Because they're like, they're kind of others, but also like to the freighter people are a unit. So the survivors are the others to them. You know what I mean? And Lost is really good at this like my tribe, your tribe sort of thing. And we've got, I guess, three tribes kind of working.
Well, because we've got the John. Really, when we compare Jack to his leadership and how he's handling the situation, you got to compare him to John.
Yeah.
And John is sure that he does not want to be found by these freighter people. You know,
and like Charlotte is justifiably frustrated. She's very happy when she lands, and by the end of the episode, she's like, "You shot me! Fuck you!" Genuinely. Oh my god! So
yeah, I mean, if we're doing a comparison of like which member of the freighter team had the worst luck,
yeah,
it's Charlotte for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Frank just got to see a cow.
Frank had the easiest time.
Cow, then Juliet comes and fixes you. That's like the greatest island experience. Cow?
I saw cow. A cow.
Saw a cow.
It's Mikhail's cow, you know.
Yeah.
It's connecting our older guys, our hot old guys.
No official podcast check-in this week because it is the last week of the writer's strike, still taking over production of Lost Season 4, or halting production of Lost Season 4. But hey, next week they come back because in the fictional time-traveling universe we're living in, rewatching Lost Season 4, the WGA manages to successfully negotiate rights to things like streaming and online bonus episodes, and I'm sure enhanced episodes of Lost, and be getting paid a little extra for that. So if you need to remember how long ago it was that you could still stiff a writer for online content, it was all the way back in late 2007, early 2008, but no more. Thank you, unions. People get writing again. We'll have another strike if we talk about entertainment properties in the future, but this one, you know, took a little toll on Lost Season 4, but I think it was worth it because if we had gone
Dr. Horrible instead.
We got Dr. Horrible. I think a whole bunch of the internet creativity was like kind of unleashed because of this, not only because they could suddenly be paid for it, but in this striking period we did get things like Dr. Horrible or Felicia Day's
the guild. Yeah,
but these web series where people just managed to do it themselves and proved that that was viable. Could you imagine like entering a Netflix era and not having had a strike to figure out how that shit was going to be paid? They would have been crushed. So thanks, guys. Thanks, WGA. Anyway, now back to Joanna for this week's book club, which I want to see how this Heart of Darkness plays in.
Well, I'm not going to go too deep. I just want to say, you know, like, so Sawyer calls John Colonel Kurtz, right?
Oh, okay. Got
which
it.
Is
it's a nickname.
Yeah, which is Marlon Brando's character in Apocalypse Now, which is a telling of Heart of Darkness. And it's not the first time that the Colonel Kurtz nickname has cropped up. I guess Charlie used it to refer to Hurley, which is like a bad use of that nickname. But to use it for John Locke is perfect. That's the perfect use of that nickname. And so I just wanted to put a little pin in Jungle Madness. Leadership gone awry in the jungle.
Leadership's hard, especially when you have no idea where the cabin is.
Especially when maybe Hurley knows better than you do. So, you know.
And then we had, you know, Prince Caspian, which you talked about.
I already talked about that.
Yeah, they play in the water. I remember. / I also read all those books, which, you know, that was a long time ago. Anyway, I think that we're going to wrap up the calm section of this podcast, but we'll be back in stormy, spoilery fashion right after this.
Now is the time on the podcast when I would like to thank our listeners at the $10 level or above on our Patreon. Thank you all so much. Starting with some newbies, we've got Michael Katzen, Amanda Merrill, MLC, Jessica Miranoff, Jen Wendt, Becca Davila, David Colley, Jen Betke, Katie Boyd, Michelle Tepper, Jason Allen, Jimmy Luck Taylor, Shante Gonzalez, Cloderic Mars, John Shen, Saran Pertz, Jennifer Caldwell, Jennifer Trice, Kristen Butterfield, and Rosa, thank you all so much.
Ooh, and I have people to thank, and heads up to my co-host, one of these has to be sung in three-part harmony. Here we go.
Ready.
Thank you, Jada Gardner, Mark Halpert, Max Stauffer, Grace Richardson, Guava Corvallis, Jolie Latini, Lizzie Hale, Raymond, Michael Lang, Caleb Masters, Liam Foucher, Kelly Gallagher, Sarah Adelhart, Jamie Smith, here we go, David G.
I don't know how harmonies work.
Melissa Beerley, Jan, Carlo Lord of the Soups and Warden of the Grill, Stephen Miller, William Eggert, and Susan Shirley. Thank you very much.
And I would like to thank the following fine humans: Weed Detective, Molly Callahan, Gabriel Buxco, Pat Jukins, Angelica Cotto, Lauren Reed, Grace O'Keefe, Catherine Davis, Tiki Mo, The Ghost of Ghost, Jeffrey Sarois, yeah, okay, close enough, Caroline, Patrick Gallagher, Cindy Schultz, Caleb O'Brien, Tony Perez, Jason Allen, D Donuts, Aaron Badillo, and Oli Ballman. Thank you all so very much for being members of the Small Council.
And we're back for the storm. I don't think there's a ton of Locke antagonist check-in besides, you know, just being Locke in this episode.
He's antagonist-y very much with Charlotte. Like, he's Charlotte's antagonist until Ben shoots her.
Yes.
And then you're like, oh, it could be worse.
And it's like, oh, I guess this John guy isn't so bad. At least he didn't shoot me.
It's like, I'm not in for what he's saying necessarily, but I get where he's coming from and he's not shooting people. So I don't have a great Locke antagonist check-in outside of the curtsy that Joanna gave me at the end.
Although,
of the column.
Here is one data point that I think is interesting on the John Locke thing. And this is something that they are building up in season four that we're going to sort of be able to follow, is that the central conflict of John's story is that he does not have any answers currently. Is that he really doesn't know where the cabin is. He doesn't know what to do next. And all these people are kind of following him anyway. And I think they do a really good job through Sawyer and Hurley and a lot of the stuff we talked about in the column of like starting to set up this thing where it's like, did John have a plan? And the answer is no, he did not have a plan.
You did not have a plan. They do kind of like try to reward the view that he could be chosen by the island. The whole line that, you know, I'd probably be dead if there, you know, had been a kidney there, really would have fit better in the episode that he came back. I feel like that would have been closer to, you know, John's dad. But I understand why they put it here, because it's sort of like this draw of fate. Same with the introduction where he's able to like re-predict the rain. We know at least from the implication of him thinking about shooting himself in the pit that the island has also rapidly healed him in a way that he can walk again. So it's like we're being shown that John's being rewarded by all these things apparently. What the Calmies don't know and what might be retroactively decided by the writers is it's the man in black who's directing him at this point.
Mm-hmm. Right. The man in black is tall Walt.
And when he finds the cabin, it's going to be man in black Christian Shepherd. So his whole thing about trusting the island and thinking he's trusting Jacob is entirely man in black manipulated.
We do eventually get to know what happened to Jacob during this time, right? He's in the statue.
It's nebulous. Yeah,
he's hanging out.
He's in the statue.
Maybe he's hanging out with people
with the smoke monster
and Richard. They're having some tea and doing some weaving. It's interesting though that John at this moment, like, because previously John was so cagey about his like, mystery man missions and stuff like this, right?
He wouldn't even let Boone tell Shannon what they were doing with the hatch.
Right, and he wouldn't even like tell them how Boone died because he didn't want to like talk about it, right? But here he's just like, you know what? Yeah, Tall Walt told me to do this. And he's just sort of like, yep, and we're going to a cabin. So you know what? Fuck you, Sawyer. Weird stuff happens on this island. I'm not afraid to talk about it. I'm fine.
Look at my wound. That's what the proof you need that there's magic.
That's a great moment too. When Sawyer's like, "Your mouth put his mouth do that to you." Whatever. Anyway,
I mean, I guess I should at this point, because I've been challenged by Terry O'Quinn, to point out that look at my wound is exactly what Jesus did to prove his resurrection. So,
wow.
Ooh,
although
Lewis.
We're not at the actual resurrection yet. That's
Jesus
just,
lying.
There's a little, C.S. Lewis showed up this episode. Here comes the Locke antagonist counter argument. Sweep it along. They know who's in that fucking coffin. Locke. We're already halfway there.
What's in the box? It's the Messiah. It's fine. Hey, Neil.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't Minkowski come to the phone?
Oh, this one's so good. Because he's tied to a bed in the sick bay because he doesn't have a constant. Which only makes sense to people who have seen the best episode of Lost, which is coming.
Poor George. Election week episode.
I know.
Yay. Poor George.
Poor George.
I love how Regina, voiced by Zoe Bell, is like, he can't come to the phone. Move on. There's weird shit happening out here on the boat. We don't need to talk about it. Move on. I also love earlier in the episode when Minkowski, as really like Fisher Stevens is a really good voice on the other line of a phone. When Minkowski's like, am I on speaker? You take me off of speaker, damn.
Yeah. And I love the like these little bits they've done that start to, this is like breadcrumbs that lead us toward the lack of trust that everyone has on the freighter. Like, by the time we get to the freighter, you know, we learn that, like, this freighter crew is wild with their, like, secrets and their distrust, and that some of them are going crazy, and we don't know what's happening. It's like, it's amazing. And just these little things, you know, the secret code words and the don't put me on speakerphone, and it's just so good. It's they do such a good job of building the mystery at the beginning of season four that... even though, you know, no matter how you feel about how it pays off, it's fun to ride with.
They were all sent here for a purpose, guys.
For a purpose.
For a reason.
Matthew Abaddon. Why would he be there?
Who put that boat, who put that plane underwater? Where'd they get all those bodies? Yeah, there's a few other breadcrumbs in this episode. There's the, why the gas masks are there. That's a preview of one of the worst episodes of Lost. And I only say that because it's really annoying that Charlotte and Dan don't tell people what's going on the right. whole episode. It makes no sense. The Dan crying and his brains being scrambled eggs and stuff like that. That's, you know, that's something we will deal with, obviously. And the twice repeated message about how they need to reduce the weight in the helicopter in order to preserve the fuel will lead up to Sawyer's big sacrifice at the end of the season. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Throw gas masks over the board or Sawyer. Your pick.
But yeah, I don't know much about aviation, specifically helicopters, but I do think this was where I learned that you can reduce the weight of a helicopter and you'll get more gas mileage, which I don't know if that's true. So if there are any pilots who listen to us, you'll have to let
like
us know.
That's been in other things where they've had to like throw, lighten the load of something in order to make it somewhere.
Maybe.
I need to think about that. But
yeah, like, I mean, I'm sure it's a real concept. Maybe.
Yeah. It makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like bigger cars require more gas to go. Eh?
Sure. Yeah. Uh-huh. More gas, bigger move.
Yeah.
I was looking up the Lostopedia facts, and apparently, while Miles is over Naomi's body, he's like mumbling to himself, but there's also a fade up of the whispers, which mm-hmm. is like the first time they're used as ghosts, right? As far as I can tell.
Speaking of.
Hey,
let's go to a listener email that has to do with a panel that Dave watched a little while ago. So this is the fan Q&A from New York Comic Con. So Matthew Wilson wrote in to us. I was struck by one of Damon's answers in the fan Q&A last week. There's a question about how the whispers related to the others, and Damon answered, I'm actually going to go out on a limb here and say that 80% of that question was actually discussed in the room. The X factor that was not part of the question is the monster itself and the idea that the monster was kind of a quasi-ghost in the sense that it could take the form of the dead. The idea was that the Whispers were sometimes the monster, sometimes the actual ghosts of the island, and sometimes a horrific story problem that we were trying to weasel our way out of. That's a classic David answer. And then Matthew goes on to write, I've never made that connection between the monster and the ghost before, but it seems really helpful as a way of coming up with a unified theory of Lost. On the one hand, we have the characters who were able to move on from their past pain into something new, the Losties and the Flash sideways, and Yemi and Echo in their own mini version of that. And on the other end, we have characters who are unwilling or unable to move on who get stuck on the island, like Michael, marooned because of his past actions and needing Walt to come forgive him before he can be free, and a host of others who have died on the island over the years, making up the Whisperers. Jacob unable to imagine a path to forgiveness for his brother, and the man in black unable to find a way of asking for one. Or to sum it all up, if we can't live together, we're going to die alone. So I remember that being like kind of for like hardcore Losties, that Damon answer about the Whispers felt like the big juicy piece that came out of that panel. Dave, since you watched the panel and wrote it up, like, would you agree? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, no, I like it. Basically, one of the other claims that they sort of, basically Damon Lindelof made on the panel was that at this point, they think they've answered all the questions. So, like, given the material, the podcasts, the cons, the whatnot, so he was like, you know, I'm going to try to answer as many of these as I can, but I think, like, we did a pretty good job of answering the questions. And so I think it's like, where anything that we think is like a giant question, they've either tried to help us understand, or there's a quote somewhere like this where they've provided the fandom with the connected material if you want to get into it. So I'm really hoping that that aspect is true and we could figure out more things to connect the monster and the ghosts. Because this actually, also if we connect it to our older idea that like, by being exposed to like trauma, the light is actually not a person. It's the light that has taken on like the trauma of a person. And that's why this character operates differently than other ghosts on the island. I really like that we're forming this like electromagnetic afterlife gravity that's holding people to this island somehow.
I think this is going to be a reach. Come with me on this journey. I've been doing this podcast, still watching for Vanity Fair about the show We Are Who We Are on HBO that's currently airing. It does not have really anything in common with Lost, but what I will say is that it's really pushing my tendency to try to conveniently slot things into like buckets or categories. Or predictable tropes, et cetera. Like that show is confounding in a good way that's like not trying to be confounding, but is just sort of like very in a chill way being like, why put a label on it? and so I think I keep coming back to things that don't seem to completely align in Lost, and they seem like big gaps. But if Damon Lindelof is just happily saying like sometimes the Whispers are ghosts and sometimes they're the smoke monster, or and so then we could say sometimes Christian Shepherd is the man in black and sometimes he's not, and sometimes Yemi is, and sometimes like just don't worry about it. Like it's not always one thing or another, and you could call that sloppy writing, or you could just say like, hey, Jungle of Mystery, like whatever, the Whispers aren't always the ghost of the trap people on the island, as we sort of understood them to be, that sometimes they're the smoke monster. Maybe sometimes a polar bear is a polar bear and sometimes it's a smoke monster. Like, I don't know. Cause I've really stressed about like, you know, things like Ben's mom or like, you know, just other things that like, don't seem like they totally make sense. And it's sort of like, what if you worry about that less, Joanna? It's okay. Because ultimately, like the main question of the show, which is why are we here? What are we for? Is answered. So when it comes to the small stuff, I'm not. Maybe I can just try sweating it less. You know?
No, I need to have video game like rules so I know how to conquer Lost World when I get there.
Okay. All part, this is the other part of Jeff's email, which is Stormy. He says, so my question is, do we think, or maybe know, if Charlotte's episode had happened, would it have included a surprise adult Daniel Faraday frantically warning her not to go back to the island as we eventually get in what little we see of her origin? Would her scrapped episode even have her on the island in the D.I.?
Darmanishif?
Thank you. Okay. They must have known they were headed towards time travel by this point, but maybe including Faraday like that would have been too much too soon. I wouldn't trade the season 5 opener's time travel reveal for the world. That moment rules so hard.
Do we think or how could they have? Because I don't think if there was a Charlotte flashback, they would have included straight up Daniel Faraday. But I think if they did know time travel was coming, you have her show up with a mysterious candy bar, it kind of does the work for you.
Maybe. What do you think, Neil?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't think... This is one of the things that's... That, yeah, they could have done more of, like, linking Charlotte and Dan Faraday, but... I don't know, Jeff is right that I wouldn't trade the time travel reveal that they do in the opening of season 5. So I think that if they were to have a Charlotte episode in season 4 and they were to sort of get anywhere near the time travel stuff, that would have, that may have thrown that whole, the quality of that reveal off later. You know, I think it's good that, like I talked about in the calm, I think it's good that there's a ton of mystery around these four characters. And it's kind of okay that we don't really get all those mysteries filled in, especially in this season, because these characters, they really, you know, they last a long time and they're great. They last all the way to the end, which is something, I guess, if I were a call me right now, and if I'm trying to remember back to how I felt in season 4 of Lost, I don't know if I, after all of the false starts they had with introducing new characters, I don't know if I would have pegged these characters as being long haul characters. Like, this feels like it could just be, you know, guest stars for season 4. Right. So I kind of like that they don't rush to fill in all the gaps quite yet. And even as we get down toward the end of season 4, we still don't get a ton of answers about, especially Faraday. And so I think that's good. I think it shows a ton of restraint and adds to, you know, the quality of the mystery world building of season 4.
Neil, you just rewatched all of season 4. Mm-hmm. According to what I just tried to look up on Lostpedia, we don't find out that Charlotte came from the island until season 5, episode 5, This Place mm-hmm. is Death. I feel like there were hints of it in season 4. Am I misremembering?
I think that the only hints of it that we get is just the idea that she's looking for the island. Like, you know, in this episode specifically, that she's looking for things that came from the island. That's the closest they really get. Okay. I think the back half, we talked about this last week, where the way the writer's strike happened, you know, it's the backstories of Charlotte and in a lot of cases Faraday, because Faraday, a lot of what he does in season 4 is the on island stuff. He's explaining the time differences, the bearings, the weirds. He's, you know, the constant is all Faraday on the island stuff. Right. So we don't really get a ton of backstory for either one of them, or really any of these characters, because we're about to jump into, you know, who else is on the freighter. Kimi. You know, we get the big reveal is Michael, you know, all that stuff. And so I think it's a credit to the patience of the writer's room. Like, they seemed very sure by the time they wrote that back half of season 4 that they were going to have these characters around for a while. So they don't feel like, it doesn't feel like they're in a hurry to tell us that much about Charlotte or Faraday or, and then, yeah, I think I hesitate to say that they benefited from not being able to do those extra episodes, but they might have, You know, it might have been a blessing in disguise that they couldn't have done a Charlotte episode in season four.
Because I think maybe it would have felt a little too much like that on Lucia Valley of season two if we were like stuck in freighter flashbacks. But I am trying to think of like what a Charlotte flashback would be like. And I think of this idea of like she was born on the island, because it's so fun when you find out that Miles was born on the island. So, you know, if she's born on the island, I can't imagine them doing a whole flashback episode for her and not revealing that. That like she and Miles and Dan are all, you know, children of the island, which is fun.
Yeah. And it's a fun balance of the first couple of seasons where we believe that, you know, nobody between Ben and Aaron was born on the island. And then we find out Ben wasn't born on the island. And then we find out that all these other people were born on the island.
I still think there's like, I still think there's something in like a Charlotte episode. You just have to figure out how to frame it where it isn't about like her birth on the island. Like if she was like negative bearded Jack, like we have to go back. But how does one get from that feeling to freighter? And then they could have gotten a little more Widmore tied up maybe. And we could have used like a little bit of that at the end. I don't know.
Season four, I think,
is so quick and efficient. Yeah, it's hard to say word insert.
It would be very difficult to do a Charlotte flashback episode because they establish here that she is looking for, I guess, the Dharma Initiative, because she doesn't seem like shocked or, you know, totally taken aback by the logo that she finds on the bear's collar. So she's clearly looking for something, and I think they're. It would be very hard to do a flashback episode for Charlotte without revealing that she knows, not only knows about the island, but has like been there before. I don't think it would have worked as well as in practice as it sounds on paper, where it would have revealed too much, I think.
Gotta keep everything moving in season four. Pieces all over the board and playing a little shell game.
Yeah, and I mean, I like that we get this little piece of the Tunisia thing, and then it comes back huge in either the finale or the episode right before the finale when Ben is all of a sudden just there, you know.
Ben with his telescoping
parka on.
His telescoping rod.
Right.
Ever at the ready. It's just such a good Ben weapon. It's just so like... rat fucky. I love it. Anyway.
So I think that is confirmed dead. Neil, where are we going next week?
Well, next week we are going on an adventure with Saeed. And we're going to find out who the economist is. And I like this is we're in the storm, so I can say this. We're about to really hit the Calmies hard with some Oceanic Six. I like how quickly all of a sudden it unravels who the Oceanic Six are. You know, like in like three episodes, we'll know them all.
Yeah. Until then, where we get to see Saeed be very good at killing some people.
His girls out.
Where can people find more of your work on the internet? We'll start this week with Joanna Robinson.
I will be working as ever at SaeedHairWatch.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
And Neil Miller.
You get me over at the filmschoolrejects.com. Get me on Twitter at Rejects at One Perfect Shot. Don't forget to follow the show at Storm Podcast. We're there too.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You could follow me on Twitter at DA7E, but don't. It's still election season. And you could listen to me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast, where we review other types of pop culture. This week, stuff you could probably see on Netflix, if you like Aaron Sorkin movies or the new Rebecca. But I will also be here every week on an episode of the Storm the Lost Rewatch podcast telling you to not fall down. Just a friendly reminder, don't fall down.